Welcome to Imagine This Podcast,
a conversation show where we talk to Milwaukee's arts, cultural, and creative leaders to highlight all the incredible transformative work in our region.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you will see our region and all the awesome artists, arts organizations, and creative assets in Milwaukee in a new way.
I'm David Lee.
I'm MacArthur Antigua.
And I'm Lindsay Sheridan.
Hi, listener. Welcome back to another edition. This is episode 2 of season 4. We would like to call it the best season of Imagine This Podcast, much like the West Wing season 4 was the best. We're going to try to go for those same things.
Should we name every one of our episodes an episode from season 4 of the West Wing?
we should. What was that? I'm thinking of the one like the Comstock filibuster. There's all these odd names of like episodes in that. We should tag each one. Yeah. That way we get the people who are searching for West Wing recaps and then they listen to our podcast too.
This is how we trick the algorithm. That's right.
That would trick the algorithm.
I am only interested in the episode, and I don't know what season it's in, where he walks down the center of the National Cathedral smoking a cigarette, which is something I should have tried before.
That's an Excelsis Deo. That's after Ms. Van Langham dies. That's after Ms. Van Langham dies. He's upset, right? He's mad at God for taking Ms. Van Langham. Oof. Gut punch of an episode.
So this is a West Wing rewatch podcast.
It just turned into a West Wing rewatch. All right. So we're back to Imagine This Podcast. Our guest on the other end of the banter is Diane Shoey. By the way, we're going to call this the banter. We're just going to call this segment called the banter. I'm declaring it.
That's right.
It's called the banter.
After three seasons, we finally figured out what this segment is called.
It's called the banter. By the way, that's going to be our new. We're also going to pitch that to ABC, all the networks, for instead of the talk and the chew.
Or the view. Right. That's right. Banter. Ours is going to be banter. The banter. That's
called
right.
The banter. That's it. You just heard it right now, listeners. All right. So after the banter, TM, we're bringing out Diane Shoey, Youth and Family Programs Coordinator at the Milwaukee Art Museum. Also, maybe outside of our folks in Boulder, super fan number one of the pod. Hmm. But outside of that, Diane was also participant in our inaugural arts and cultural leaders in public health that we ran towards the end of 2021, as well as talking about her journey moving from the publishing industry into museum life. So it's really good stuff after the banter. So as we get into it, before we bring our guest on, wanting to, during this opening segment to, David, you just talked about it, we're kind of into our third year of existence.
Heading into our third year of existence.
And I think the thing about it is that what is that that ship of Theseus analogy of the ship that kind of kept replacing parts of itself, right. And then at some point it's like, is it still the same ship? Imagine was imagined by a whole set of leaders and artists in town to meet a demand that had not been met. And of course, there were previous iterations of this. So it sort of suggests that this has been the case for a while. And so Imagine was developed to step into that. And again, as Imagine, as it's when it moves from flip charts and binders into people doing day-to-day work, it evolves, right? And so I think as we head into year three, I think we're having a collective moment of what do we think Imagine is doing? Like, obviously, I think we're doing what folks had wanted in that room to do, as evidenced by the amount of public funding that has increased for arts and culture, to the amount of more people involved, I believe, in decision-making processes, in driving the agenda collectively, right? I think we've achieved some of those things, but I think we're also doing things that are responding to the moment as well, that I don't think folks in that room were able to do. I would love to use this conversation as sort of a chance to sort of parse that out, because it isn't just a chamber of commerce for the arts and cultural sector. I think that's a fine analogy, but I also think it's incomplete. Mm-hmm. So that's the tee up. That's my long-winded tee up.
Yeah, and I think the salience of this conversation as it relates to our guest Diane Shoey coming on to chat with Mac really is like this idea, right, that like we held this arts and culture leaders working public health cohort partially as a response to a lot of the kinds of convenings that we've been holding in the year or so leading up to that moment. And then now as we're coming into our third year, really beginning to think about like, how do we accelerate the work of convening people to kind of marshal their energies towards actions and towards goals and towards objectives to building this thriving and creative and vibrant Milwaukee powered by arts and culture. You know, I think for me, Mac, sort of thinking a little bit about some of the core work of what Imagine does, right, which is to bring people together and sort of marshal their energies. I was I've been working on an application to join this fellowship cohort that I was nominated for. That essentially is the idea, right, is to kind of like utilize capital absorption frameworks, right? That's a really easy, that's a really complicated way of like thinking about how capital moves through systems towards redeveloping like in neighborhoods that have been divested, and they're looking for like creative placemaking folks to be involved. So anyways, I'm applying to be a part of this cohort, and really sort of got me thinking about like, when we think about how capital moves, it sort of moves on the path of least resistance, right? And to get to investment, to get to like buildings and projects and deals and all that stuff. And I think my takeaway from that is that, you know, it's not unlike the work that we do, right? Like however, we're not moving capital. We're sort of moving energy or commitments into a system. And I think our challenge has always been, how do we set up these engagements where people can sort of, that can sort of absorb this energy and this engagement and action from people so that they can be marshaled towards a goal. And I think, you know, as we think about some of our working groups and some of our smaller cohorts, I think the ones that have been the most successful have been the ones where those deals, so to speak, or the options for people to sort of capture and absorb energy have been the most readily accessible, visible, and tangible, right? And I think that's sort of the thing that's really kind of like pushing me towards this fellowship, right? Is to sort of figure out how we might be able to utilize some of the learnings from this capital absorption framework to sort of bring to our work of like, how do we kind of set up more of these engagements where people can really see. When they participate with us, when they participate in a cohort or a convening or a work group, that like they're able to kind of like put their energies into a thing that will lead to an outcome of advancing this pretty big agenda, right, of creating a thriving Milwaukee powered by arts and culture.
Yeah, you know, hearing that, the thing that sticks out for me is that people don't convene the way we convene in everyday life, you know, and people aren't used to showing up into a space where something's going to be asked of them that might be beyond a simple contribution or a kind of standard way of brainstorming and executing committee work. You know, it's different, right? It's inviting them to show up and develop as ideally as leaders in person and role, to spend their valuable time capital, in contributing to projects that hopefully have alignment with what they're doing in role day to day, but might not, might be more focused on the sector at large. And we often hear to pat ourselves / high five Mac, you know, we often hear after convenings that, I've never been in a meeting like this. Like, I want this sort of support in other meetings and other conversations where, you know, you're going to have a difficult or creative conversation with your team or do some strategic planning or some, you know, that people are hungry for being able to come together in a way that ends up yielding more productive and more meaningful outcomes. So I think we're deep in thinking about how can we grow that capacity that we've been able to begin to, I hope, start to feel like make more of a norm in how the arts and culture sector in Milwaukee works together.
I was also thinking about, well, thanks for lifting that up, Lindsay, in terms of people feeling great about how when we hold them, right? And I also appreciate it when teammates complain about going to other people's meetings and going, how come we're not doing check-ins, or how come we're not,
Jamboard sucks, yeah,
how we're not doing this, or yeah, Jamboard's trash, why aren't we using Mural? I think the other thing that, you know, when I, again, this is my big picture brain happening, right? I'd like to think that what happens, what Imagine does, right, back to our name, is that it attracts people that can imagine a better city. And obviously arts and culture is going to be a big part of it. But at some point, to imagine something different, it's going to be really, it's kind of scary because it's a dream. It's a possibility, right? And so to even put the idea out there, you're vulnerable to go, this could be possible. It takes some chutzpah, right? It takes some guts to do that. And so how might we be the entity, right? That if somebody's got that possibility in their mind, like, that, wouldn't it be great if dot, dot, dot? We would be the partners in supporting them in seeing that through somehow, right? And obviously we'll probably partner with them that has an arts and cultural, you know, alignment, because that's our sweet spot, right? But I that's when I think of like the cohort work that we did and that Diane's speaking to. All those people in that cohort are doing work in their own system. Like, they're trying to push something in their own places that were different before. And so what we were able to provide was a place for them to have connection, to get a look at the balcony, and have accountability to themselves. Like, they're out of the thick of it, and they might be like, oh, I could have done that differently. Or somebody who doesn't even work with them can have an objective view and like, hey, have you thought about this? And I think about and again, I don't think this is just arts and culture sector, right? This is a fragmented city that is driven by scarcity. That's such a tough place to imagine from, right? And so I think it's really important for us to figure out, how do you hold spaces, hold people in a way that they can have that with each other, and go, nobody knows what the answer is, but man, if we can lean into each other enough, maybe we'll find something that inspires us to do something differently. And I guess the last piece is, people can experience each other beyond the boundaries that they normally would, right? Me and David just hosted this lovely advocacy webinar where only a couple of people showed up, but it was almost like, well, that's an interesting pairing, you know, like, huh. And what was cool was, they got to see each other, witness each other, care about this thing. They want better advocacy. And they wouldn't, I don't think they would have chose to be in a meeting with each other. That, you know what I mean? They wouldn't have had reason to, but yet we're holding that serendipity. We're holding that thing because, you know, for that. And I think this is value that sounds really, sounds kind of tough to explain, but I know when people feel it, they feel it, you know, and they need it.
That's, you know, I think that tough to explain value, Mac, is priceless, right? And when I say priceless, I mean, like, it's hard to put a dollar amount on it, because when you feel it, you feel it. And when you know it, you know it. And you can't buy it, right? You can't plan for it. You can't buy it. There's nothing that it just happens. And I think there's something about our work that when we do it right, like, more of those sorts of relationships sort of spring up, which then sort of create that bond of, and you all heard me say it at our conference, right? This idea of willing the good of the other as other, not to boost yourself or your own status, right? You're actually trying to help the other person as a different person, because you care about them. And I think that is, in our day and age, right, that's hard to get, and particularly to your point, Mac, as a city that is as fragmented and segregated as ours, you know.
Yeah, David, I just want to lift up again, you're reminding me of a story that I know. I came up in violence prevention, but I also came up in, you know, leadership development through public allies, right? So there's these strands, and I remember I heard the story about a foundation in Boston that was working in violence prevention, right? They're trying to reduce violence outcomes in Boston, and so they came up with this foundation came up with this program for leaders of violence prevention organizations. And they call it a leadership program, right? And it was like you take them through a year kind of thing. I think what they really just did was just create space for these people to get to know each other and get to understand what drives them, right? And they house it in a curriculum. But when they wrote the report afterwards, like, our gist was, we just wanted these people to know each other. So when this thing was done, they would be more likely to call upon each other and be more likely to work together. That always stuck with me, right? And it's fascinating that it took a foundation to say, like, well, we got our own money and we'll do it. Like, they didn't have to convince nobody. Like, this is our bet. We're gonna do this. And I think I carry that with, like, that primal truth of, you know, yeah, we got some cool tools. Yeah, there's some stuff when you come to the things, but at the end of the day, you know, where else are you going to do this?
Yeah.
Which is have a deep connection with somebody else who are like-valued, like-minded, and you're trying to go in the right direction. So I that's what keeps me hope. Like, that's what keeps me in the game. Like, man, I know that's when we're at our best, that's what people feel. That's, I think, what people felt at the summit. I think that's what people feel like when they get something done in a work group that works, you know, things like that. So, well, that's just us workshopping future grant applications. You just witnessed it, right? Of what we're trying to do. Hopefully one of you will get it. Hopefully one of you listening.
Is there like a digital submission?
Mackenzie Scott, are you listening? You listening, Mackenzie Scott? You listening? No. Yeah. Is there a digital submission? Just do audio. No, but you know, in all seriousness, I think I really do believe that it's important to name this work in honor, you know, and really, you know, create a name that is happening so people know why it's happening and what needs to happen. So not just because we need to stay open in business, but I think it's to show the value that these things matter and, you know, our sustainability. When we say sustainability, I'm talking about our ability to work together, right? There, to not just through this pandemic, but through the next whatever, right? We're not trying to program to get through a thing. We're trying to figure out how to be with each other in a way that's going to sustain ourselves, right? And that's a long-term shift, and it's going to take long-term practice. That being said, I'm really excited to bring our guest on. She's going to talk a little bit more about her experience in it. Diane Choey. She's the Youth and Family Programs Coordinator at the Milwaukee Art Museum. She's also done stints at the Museum of Chinese in America, the Whitney Museum of American Art, as well as the New Museum, prior to coming here a few years ago from the East Coast. After the break, Diane. Welcome into the room, Diane.
Hello.
It's unfortunate that this is an audio pod, because I think to have the full Diane experience, you have to have the visual experience.
That is
because you're like a very expressive person. So you're a 3D person. Some people are really much better in Zoom. You're actually, Zoom doesn't help you. Like it takes away from the total thing. But that being said, we'll talk about that in a bit. You've been able to become a new YouTube influencer through work. Oh, so that's right. Absolutely. Like you've increased your followers. But before I get to that, Diane, welcome to the pod. You know, we've had you 2 years ago.
Yes.
Yes. So you're not a newcomer to the pod, right? So usually we'd ask a familiar question, like tell us about an arts and cultural experience that influenced you. We're going to alter that a little bit and just sort of change that to, since we last connected with you, what's been a profound arts and culture experience? And I am very well aware that the pandemic experience has been a filter on what you probably intended to have, and or maybe something new you discovered as a result of that. So I'm recognizing the pandemic might have played a role in what types of experiences you've been able to have. So what would your point be as something that has resonated with you, or a specific experience in Milwaukee?
Sure. I'm thinking of something very recent, actually. I just saw the Japanese movie Drive My Car at the Oriental Theater this past weekend. And I was already really excited about it. And then it got a bunch of Oscar nominations. And I thought, oh, okay, well, now I'm just the person going to see it after the Oscar nominations. But it's incredible. It's 3 hours long, which normally is like my absolute no, I can't do this. That's like every Marvel movie and everything else that's like way too long. This did not feel long. It was gorgeous visuals, wonderful story, like kind of strange story. And yeah, I felt so lucky to be able to see it in the beautiful Oriental Theater, that the large, wonderful theater. And it was a really magical experience. It was so nice.
How often would you say before the pandemic, you're like, I'm going to go see a movie in the theater? Like, how is that an often thing? Is that a somewhat thing for you?
Yeah, pretty often. I mean, I live on the east side, so I'm in walking distance of the Oriental. And one of the first things I did when I moved here was get a film membership. So I average maybe like almost once a week, or maybe like three times a month, something.
Okay.
Like that.
But now, like in lieu of the pandemic, what would you say your habit is with that?
So now I've been reading a lot. Last year I used Goodreads, and I did one of those reading challenges. Last year I read 100 books, which I don't think I've done since like I was a kid. And you know, some of them
You get like a pie at Baker Square when you do that. You're right. Like you'd collect all these coupons because you read the X amount of books.
I've gotten so many personal pan pizzas with.
Yeah, so there it is. Thank you. I couldn't remember what the tie-in was, but yeah, it's something like. Yeah, you got like a blizzard at the DQ. They got to bring that back, like rewarding us with things because we read. Because I know I don't read as much. You read it just for the love of reading.
No, it's true. But yeah. So, and I'm also very close to the East Branch of the Milwaukee Public Library. So yeah. I was going back and forth and using their digital checkout. So I was doing a lot of reading. It's like the only activity I do where I have to be totally focused. And I can't glance at my phone.
Wait, you don't do like a second book? Like I do a second book while I'm reading a first book. You know, like the second screen, you know, like I have there's a book I'm reading and then I have another book in my lap. And then I just go, no, I'm just kidding.
I can't. Although my mom, who was a librarian for many years, she's retired now, but she would always have like four books going on at once. There'd be like one on her nightstand, one in the living room, an audiobook in the car, a different audiobook when she was gardening. So like she almost did that actually.
I feel like that's a librarian thing. They're like the CrossFit athletes of literacy. Like they can do things like that. Like you're right. I can't. I might have a magazine articles, but that's a lot. But for you, right? Like so again, back to reading for you was just a bit like family business. Like you used to be able to read a lot. But this movie struck you. And again, there's something you go once a week. Would you say you're not at that level now, given, I mean, we're in this in between with Omicron, like it's much better than it was a month ago, but were you watching movies once a month? Like what would you say?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it went down a little bit. I mean, when they were offering at home streaming through Milwaukee Film, I was actually watching maybe still one a week. I watched a ton of film festival movies. I loved that. That was so accessible. But yeah, I haven't, I don't know. Is it the cold that I haven't been going? Or is it that I got out of the habit of like leaving my house?
Yeah.
But I haven't been going quite as often. I think at any given moment, I've seen like one or maybe two of the movies that they're showing. But yeah. I think before I was like, I have to see everything.
Yeah.
I feel like they have great taste and like whatever they're showing, I really like. I always go for the member screening every month. So I definitely haven't missed that. But yeah, I just feel like I'm not leaving my home as much. So movies are part of what's been cut a little bit, but I'm hoping that'll ramp back up.
But you're speaking to the power of being present in a box, you know, in a dark room and the huge screen and the, you know, that in itself an experience, you know, be it you're watching a Marvel movie or Drive My Car, right? Which is a very specific type of, probably not, unless it's like their version of the Marvel universe, which
it's like the opposite. It's like a very quiet set of Japanese characters who use a lot of silence. So it's not Thor.
I was kind of hoping you're saying they're just reading the whole time. You're just watching a lot of characters just reading the whole time, reading different books. Well, Diane, thanks for just dabbling. And again, just sort of getting us started thinking about how, you know, obviously you're not a stranger to arts and culture. You work in arts and culture. That's why we have you here. And you're an educator at the Milwaukee Art Museum. Although I have to say that isn't like, did you grow up thinking I'm going to be a Milwaukee, you know, not Milwaukee, I'm going to be an art educator or like I'm going to be working in the museum world. Was that you're growing up or like there've been other chapters, right? Professional chapters in your life.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, I never specifically thought that. I think I didn't realize it was a thing, which I feel like most jobs are like that. Like as a child, you're not even aware they exist.
Unless it's law or police. There's a lot of TV shows about doctors and lawyers and police people, but not museum workers.
No, it's true. Although I was going to say that teaching was always kind of interesting to me. I had a younger sister. We're almost 5 years apart. So I had more of a, almost like a third parent or like mentor, she would be so upset if she heard me say that, but like I felt more like a showing her things, you know.
Well, you're an older sib. Like, you're an older sib, right? You're like showing the ropes kind of things,
exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And I did always kind of enjoy mentorship. I babysat from a young age and I did a lot of volunteering with kids in like high school and college. So that's not a shock. But we did, I grew up in New Jersey. So we have some nice museums near us where I grew up. And then, you know, we'd go into New York every now and then and go to like the Met or the Natural History Museum. So museums were always like part of my landscape. It wasn't like we went every week, but you know, it was definitely something that my family did together. And then you mentioned like, so earlier in my career, I'm a career changer. I worked in book publishing, speaking of books again.
Reading.
New York. Yeah. So.
Book publishing in New York. Sounds like a movie. Sounds like another movie.
It is a movie. It's Sandra Bullock, The Proposal.
You were the Ryan Reynolds. Were you the Ryan Reynolds role? That was it. You were Ryan Reynolds.
Yes. I was the one who had to marry the Canadian to get their green card. I don't quite remember. But I grew up loving reading. And then when reading kind of became my job, it wasn't as appealing as like a hobby when I was not at work. So being in New York, I would go to museums, and it was something I did for fun. I also, I did intern at my college's art museum in the education department, which, side note, embarrassingly, it was my boyfriend at the time in college was a studio art major, and he applied to be a curatorial intern.
Oh.
And then I was like, oh, I'll apply for education. That would be fun. And he didn't get his, but I got mine.
No.
So I had this like little toe in the pond of museum education, but I was like, I don't want to go to grad school. Moved to New York. And then the museum just became kind of like, oh, this is what I do for fun.
But you had a perspective. And again, I don't want to assume for a lot of people, but like, you know, I've worked in nonprofit all my life. And I know, like, I don't want to speak for my family, but like people I've come is like, oh, you get paid for that? Like right. you had a familiarity with museums in the sense of like, oh, wait, you all are volunteers. It's like, even though you've worked as interns, you've seen people who've worked in those settings, administered or delivered programming. So that wasn't foreign to you necessarily. Like you had exposure to that world, but you were working in publishing, which sounds like a much more solitary, you know what I mean? Like you're reading a lot of books and probably marking a lot of stuff up, or, you know, or saying this is worth moving forward or not moving forward, less of an education. So it's almost like a totally different skill set almost, right?
And you're right. It did feel very solitary. And I like to be with people. I like being with kids. I was always the one on like bring your kids to work day. Like they would send the kids over to me and I would be like, let me show you MS Paint or something, you know, like, or like, let's play a drawing game. Like
you're already there. Yeah. They're like, you're already there. Oh, wow.
But yeah. I didn't love like just being in a cubicle by myself all day. I liked, you know, the few times I could interact, like when we'd have a book event and we'd be at a bookstore with an author, and I loved meeting the readers. And then I just kept thinking, I was like, why am I locking myself in the computer all day? This isn't where I'm happy. And then that's when I kind of revisited. I was like, hey, I really like that internship I did in college. And so it turned into this like slow creep back to where I'd accidentally ended up years earlier.
No, I mean, did you find yourself like in that setting, like the odd bird out? Because I also have to think people that are holding your similar roles, and you worked, I'm sure, in a publishing house, there's lots more of you. Right. There's lots of fun, like a mom and pop shop. So, and I'm guessing like these people are attracted to this gig because it kind of plays into their preferred introvertedness and solitariness. And they're probably looking at you like, why is this person talking to me all the time? But did you get that experience? Like, did you get vibes where you're like, wait, Diane, like, why? Like, or not?
Well, you know, it's funny. I feel like in the general world, I'm more of the like, oh, I like to read. I like to go to museums. Like, that's not the like, I'm wild and crazy. But you're right. In that world,
you're like, what? Yeah.
In normal world, I'm like, oh, I'm quiet and bookish. But in the book world, you're right. Like, I and my friends, like, we'd be the ones visiting each other's desks and being like, did you see Project Runway last night?
Yeah. And everyone's staring at you like, do you get what we're doing here? We're by ourselves. Taking in words,
right.
Writing with our red pens. Can you stop talking?
I wish it were that. It's not like working at a library. Like there is a lot of like.
There's chatter. Yeah.
You know, and we published a lot of, one of the houses I was at did a lot of like kind of pop culture, kind of nonfiction. So there was a lot of like, did you see this article? You know, there was truly that kind of collaboration. So it wasn't like everyone silently sitting.
His cones, like everybody's looking there. You're right. Just staring at you, shushing you the whole time. Like I'm trying to.
You're absolutely right. There were more of that type within that world than, again, like in the general world.
One of the questions we were reflecting on, you know, during our team talks this week at Imagine, That's one of the challenges, Diane, is that we do a team talk every day and I always have to think of a reflective question every day during the pandemic. Yeah, I'm running low. But one of the questions we thought about is like, was there any time in your work or you ever realized I might not be in the right role? You know, what was that about? Right. It sounds like you had a similar kind of epiphany, like, oh my gosh, I'm spending a lot of my time solitary in front of you. Is that right? Is that you had that?
You're
moment.
Absolutely right. It wasn't an epiphany. It wasn't a moment. It was like,
it just wasn't like in the usual suspects where you dropped, you know, you had a mug, you dropped your mug and it's like, you looked at your wall and you're like, wait a minute. All these things tell me that.
I wish Mac, that my life were that cinematic. I wish I had that. It was like this slow creep over because it's a cool, fun job. And I got to, you know, again, I got to like meet a lot of cool authors and we did all these interesting things and we had great conversations. So there was a lot to really love about it that I still love, but like slowly I just kept thinking like, this isn't quite right.
Yeah. And you almost have to talk yourself out of it in a way. Like, oh my God, there's all these cool things.
Yeah.
Just stick with it. Like, you know, come on.
Exactly. Right. And it's one of those, you know, it's like the dinner party thing where you meet people, oh, what do you do? And like, it was exciting and cool to be like, oh, I work in book publishing and I worked with like XYZ authors and people will be like, whoa, that's
ooh.
Cool.
Ooh.
You know, 'cause you're like a pharmacist or whatever. Not that pharmacy is not also an interesting.
I like that you just like took shots at the pharmacy world.
But there's like that cool factor, right? Of like, oh, like.
I think when people ask me what I do for a living, I just have a deep sigh like, all right. It's not arts and culture. It's arts and culture adjacent. And I'm like, forget it. And then I just, not that we have these meetings, not that we have these socials anymore, but like, you know.
No, it's true. Well, also if you say museums, people only know curators. So they're like, oh, are you a curator? And I'm like, nope.
Nope, I'm not.
But luckily I do have the thing where I can say, did you ever go on a field trip to a museum?
Yeah.
Remember how there were people who led you around? You were by yourself wandering. So I personally don't exactly.
Diane, then they go like, no, I went to a Montessori. Yeah, and that was like the whole deal with Montessori is they let us just do stuff on our own. Like nobody,
right,
nobody
yeah. Remember when the bus just left you off and you just like were free to roam by yourself as a child?
Yeah, if you were to tell me that story, I'm like, oh, you're the one who told me where to put my lunch in the box, you know, in the big holder, and then I would come
There's always some vague. Everyone's had that experience at some point, even if it was like one time in fourth grade or whatever. But there's at least like something to cling on to there, as opposed to I'm sure your position is difficult to explain to people who are not already a little familiar.
It's a bummer because it's not that I'm sick of it. It's just like it is such a unique kind of role. I remember when I was like, I find myself commonly in these kind of roles where, and not commonly, I mean, my previous gig, I was there for a long time. So it wasn't like I was always searching for work, but I remember when I'd left it and I was like putting my stuff together. And I just had this sort of existential thing where like, I feel like I have a specific set of skills that aren't the most like obvious for people to want to hire. And it felt like I was almost like, I feel like I'm like a Canadian yarn artist. Like, you know, like, you know what, for those folks, like you say, for that crew, I'm awesome. But like for most of the world, it's like, you do what? Like, how do you, what, huh? Like, okay. Like they pay you for that. Like, wow. Huh?
So right,
that was sort of like my vibe.
For like, I can punch and kick. It's very clear what I can do.
Yeah. I'm a kick puncher. Oh, I know. I get kick puncher. Yeah, totally kick puncher. So anyways, so you sort of mentioned being in this role and now you're at Milwaukee Art Museum. You've been there for a few years now, right? 3 years?
Yep.
Yeah, 3 years now. And obviously that's a big, you know, that's a big team, right? That's how many people work there.
You know, I don't know the exact numbers. I think we're around like 150.
Yeah. So that's not,
because we have like, you know, like part-time and
temporary. Yeah. That's not a mom and pop shop, right? That's a big crew.
Yes.
But what was also unique, and I'm sort of segueing into another experience you worked with Imagine, is that we hosted a cohort of folks for about 6 months to meet virtually. And the theme was people working utilizing arts and culture
sort of arts and culture practices towards public health outcomes. Mm-hmm. And so you were part of that. You self-selected in that we offered that to everyone in our network and the mm-hmm. premises. We were going to convene people once a month virtually, but then as part of that, we were building a cohort, right? So it's not just you come and show up, but you actually do one-on-one connections with people in your cohort mm-hmm. and you actually think of a project, right? You think about the work that you're doing in your case, right? Art education, right? And that there are public health outcomes for that, for the young people that you bring in. And so you were part of that experience. You self-selected and opted into that and just completed it at the turn of the year. We ran it. It was about several months, right? We ran it. So wanted to pick your brain about what that experience was like. Because again, we extended that to a lot of people, everyone, like we sort of put it out there. And maybe like 15 people were like, let me check this out. So I'm just sort of curious, what was it about you that you're like, I'm going to be part of this 15 people that is going to, that this resonates with me, but I'm really curious, like, what about getting that invitation? You're like, you know, what was it like to get that invitation to check it out? Or what compelled you to say like, let me invest some time, because you invested about 12 hours a month, you know?
Sure. Well, first of all, as you know, because I sent you that fan letter 2 years ago, but I'm a big fan of yours, Mac. And I mean, just to jump ahead of where your question is, you're such a wonderful facilitator, which is no surprise since you're a wonderful host of this.
I'm a wonderful Canadian yarn artist. That's correct. I'm a wonderful exactly. Canadian yarn artist.
So it was really appealing to get to work with you. But also something that I've been trying to really actively do since I moved to Milwaukee, again, as you said, about 2.5 years ago, is just like, make connections with people, get mm-hmm. to know people. I feel like a lot of my coworkers and other people I've met in Milwaukee grew up in Milwaukee or have been here for a long time, and they're super familiar with other people, other orgs, and I'm trying to catch up. So I've been trying to push myself to kind of do those cold calls or like send the fan letter like I did with you. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, what a great opportunity to meet other people that are doing work similar to mine and have mm-hmm. goals and values similar to mine. So that was the big appeal to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just having a network that's like built in that I could get to know everyone and then for us to be led by you.
Well, I held the space, but again, you all were doing the work. And so again, I probably offered up as you met virtually for about 2.5 hours a month on Zoom, mm-hmm. use some other sort of platforms. We also had sort of a website, you know, Facebook-like sort of setup where you got to connect and I would give assignments, right? Reading assignments and sort of offer up some tools and articles to kind of offer as a layer, right, onto the work. But you were doing your own work, right? And could you describe sort of the work that you were trying to do and hope that this, you know, again, on one level, you were trying to advance relationships, right? Connections with other like-minded, like-valued folks. But there was a specific project you were advancing. Could you talk about that and maybe say, what about that? You know, what about this experience either advanced it or maybe hindered it? That's okay too. Like it's, you know, it doesn't have to be a fluff piece. I want to be clear to the audience.
I did get to advance my work in a project. So I actually kind of picked up the baton of a project that was started earlier pre-pandemic where we, again, I'm in youth and family. So we have an art studio on site. Side note, it's about to reopen finally, hooray. Yes. We have other programming on site, and then we also have a van that goes out to different events and gatherings all around the Milwaukee area. So what had started before was to really analyze where are we reaching people? Where are people living who we're kind of connecting with, whether it's on our site at the museum or out at, you know, State Fair or Summerfest or whatever. And so we do these surveys where people fill out some information, including their zip code. Mm-hmm. So I was gathering zip codes of people who filled out those surveys, again, on-site and off-site. And I also got the visitor data from our visitor services department. So when you come to the museum, they'll ask you, what's your zip code? And maybe mm-hmm. you're wondering, why do you care? And that's for people like me to figure out, where are people coming from? Are you local? Are you in Milwaukee? Are you visiting from out of state or out of the country? Mm-hmm. But also, where in Milwaukee are you? What neighborhood are you in? Mm-hmm. So I compiled all that data. Of course, it was a little bit wonky because we were closed for a little bit early COVID. So
sure.
I went a little bit back to the 2018-2019 fiscal year, 2019-2020 fiscal year. And I just, I looked at who are we reaching and who are we not reaching, or who are we not seeing? Mm-hmm. And I figured out the 6 zip codes within Milwaukee County where we weren't seeing a percentage of visitors that was in keeping with the percentage of that population within Milwaukee. So kind of keeping that same ratio. And then I targeted those areas to look at, okay, what schools are there? For our classes, we have a scholarship program, and families can apply for the scholarship, or teachers can nominate students. So again, here's that cold calling. I just started calling and emailing schools and saying, hey, we have a scholarship program for kids who really like art. We're all virtual right now. We'd love to have some of your students. And thankfully, a bunch of teachers, parent coordinators, and other admin people at these schools I reached out to got back to me. And we got to add some new kids from areas that, again, we're not really reaching. The next phase, which I'm still in the works on, is reaching out to pre-Ks, daycares, and other early childhood centers and organizations, again, within those same zip codes, to really invite them to connect with us. We have programming that I run. It's actually a program called Playdate with Art, and that's for kids ages 0 to 5. Normally we meet every month in Wendover Hall in like the beautiful space there in the sun with the windows. I've been doing videos in lieu of that during the pandemic. And then we also have these activity cards for kids that were developed with Vroom, which is an early childhood organization that really promotes learning and development for kids starting right from birth. And we have all these activities that you can do with even the youngest kids in the galleries. And it's, you don't have to have any art knowledge. It's about finding colors or looking for animals and making the sounds or looking for shapes. It's really accessible stuff. So we want to get the message out there that the museum's really for everybody. Even, you know, sometimes people say, oh, my kids are too little, I'll bring them when they're older. And we're like, no, bring them in now. We have lots of fun stuff they can do. So the cohort was such a wonderful kind of laboratory for me to figure out, like, okay, how am I gonna do this? What are my next steps? I just had this like vague idea, but speaking with you and the rest of the cohort, and then the self-reflection activities that you mentioned, where I really kind of drilled down, like, okay, what am I trying to do here? Like, who do I want to connect with, and how and why?
Was there a specific like tool or like a framework, or maybe even a specific conversation that you felt was a catalytic? Like, it didn't have to be the one, like you said, epiphany, but do you remember or recall any specific sort of, you know, thing that supported you to maybe break through in ways that maybe if you hadn't had that construct, and again, the sliding doors, right, referencing another movie, right, like you might not have. Sort of curious about that.
Yeah, well, I really liked the concept that you introduced early on, and we carried throughout the person role system, where again, it's this real like self-reflection of not just who am I and what do I do, but how is that kind of centered within myself, my role, which is at work, but also like as a person in the world, and then system, for me, like the larger Milwaukee community, how do I and my role fit into that? So that was actually, it was helpful to kind of separate those strands a little bit and really understand, okay, what are like my values, me as a person, Diane, and then how do I click in with what I'm doing in my work at the art museum? And then how does that hopefully connect with and provide some meaningful, you know, interaction with the larger community. So that conversation, I hadn't really like separated it out like that before. And yeah, I found that super helpful. And I really liked that you kind of brought it back throughout our time together. It was something, it was an ongoing theme. So every time we had these conversations, it was like, okay, how does this fit in with your person role system concept? Like, what, like how do all these things mesh together, or do they mesh together?
Yeah, I mean, thanks for noticing that. I mean, I think, you know, and again, this is part of, you know, Diane, this is a lovely way of educating, because it's not, we don't talk like this with our listeners, but that's one of the frameworks we use a lot to your point, just for our listeners, this notion of personal role system, like you described, you know, what we call leadership, right? The act of leadership is, you know, we believe that the systems are producing the results that they're designed to produce. And I think that I would hold that it's not good enough. You know, it's evidence that our current systems, they're not broken, they're working as in design. So therefore, wherever you're in from role, you have an opportunity to disrupt and reform or massage that system so it actually moves towards the results that we, you know, that we should have. And in this case, you're talking about there are people from zip codes that aren't accessing it, right? So that you sort of saw like, huh, you know, we should change. How can you from your role change your system at the, you know, or modify the system a bit at the art museum so that folks from those zip codes actually see themselves more at the museum or feel more welcome and see it. So that, and the elements that you talked about is like, there's elements of you that you can click into, there's elements in your role that you can click into. And again, when we say, I think we use the phrase separate, it's notice that there's boundaries that you're consciously pushing, because I think once you know you're consciously pushing boundaries, you gotta be aware there's some risk with that, because then the system is gonna push back on you consciously pushing beyond that. And that's okay. But that's just part of the thing you have to hold on to, is how do you hold steady when you might get pushback mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And so I'm curious, did you ever experience pushback? I'm not trying to get anybody in trouble, but did you notice ways that, you know, I almost call it like an immune system in a way. The system wants to hold the status quo as much mm-hmm. as possible, right? Did you notice ways that the system, not evilly, but did you notice ways that it was trying to hold it to almost keep it so that it might have been challenging to initiate the change that you're talking about? Sure. Does that resonate with you?
I think everything I was doing, not I think, I know, everything I was doing is very much in alignment with what we're trying to do. The thing that was nice about being in the cohort was, for kind of my larger work in the museum and for myself, it carved out space for me to make time to do this work. I don't mm-hmm. think I could have done it to this extent or with the level of success that we had without having the cohort to say, no, I have to do this. I have every month you kind of had us create a goal for the next month. And, mm-hmm. You know, I think there's always so much going on. I know everybody always says, oh, I'm so busy, but you know, there's always so much going on. And this is something I think that could be easy to leave until later, right? Forever. Mm-hmm. Because we do get scholarship applications regularly. We have some teachers that we've had relationships with for a long time who always send us kids, and it's wonderful. So this isn't like, oh, we need to get new kids for, you know, because we're running low in numbers or something. But this is something I've wanted to do. And I know, again, our department and the museum, we want to do this, but it's just hard to prioritize it and for it to make it up the list to be like, oh, I'm actually going to dedicate some time to this. So yeah, there wasn't any pushback in terms of what I wanted to do, but there's just always so many other, you know, immediate fires to put out kind of that, oh, I have to do this first, I'll do that later. And it's easy again to just keep saying I'll do that later forever. But this really forced me to have that time every month, which I really appreciate.
Well, but I think, Diane, you're also speaking to, you know, and this is what I think about, is that you're speaking to competing commitments, meaning, hey man, we've gotten scholarships before, things are good, right? We're not hurting. There wasn't like this emergency, mm-hmm. right, to do it. And so in some ways, right, there are other commitments to other priorities, to other things, mm-hmm. but you in your role noticed, you know what, we could do this, you know, how about we change a priority to make sure we get these folks from these zip codes mm-hmm. to be here, right? And so at that moment, right, like you're inviting your colleagues, those you were working with, to have to make that a new priority. And that's, again, it's there's going to be some pushback, because they're going to lose, there's going to be a tension there in terms of like, well, this new priority. And sometimes new priorities are pursued because of authorization. My boss made me do it. But it's even more, you know, nuanced when you don't necessarily have the formal authority, right, to go, right, there was nothing on high that said, we're going to increase all these zip codes. That it was you saying, hey, I'm noticing this, let me do it. And that's an act of leadership, right? That's an act of leadership where like, nobody's asking for it. Another definition I like of leadership is taking responsibility for something that nobody else is taking responsibility. And this is not a knock anybody. Like you said, everybody sort of wants it. Everybody desires that result, right? But we also know good intentions aren't always the source of it, right? Good intentions need to be paired with the intentionality of space and the intentionality of action that you'll take as a result of taking mm-hmm. that space to do it, right? And you, like you said, for yourself, you're able to hold that. And that was the, that was what afforded you to do that. So thanks for doing that. And that it was fun. Thank you know, it was you. So much fun to hold that space for folks. And at the end of the day, right? Like I, when I witness people doing this, it's a good reflection for me to be like, what am I doing? You know, like, how am I doing on my own commitments and all these things? So it's just a great process. And so, yeah, I'm glad it was so much fun to do. And
it
yet,
was really, I miss it. I miss our monthly meetings. They were so much fun.
Yeah, they were fun to hold. They're pretty tough to plan for, but that's a good tough because it's like an audience you always want to make sure you crush it with. But yeah, and again, as we said, imagine, I think our hope is that we believe work is, that's how work is done, you know, in terms of taking on work that maybe nobody asked for, but people saw this has got to be different. And then finding allies, right? Finding people to support you and thinking it through and finding spaces to get new insights and new perspectives and new tools that you'll go, okay, because I had this, I'll try this, I'll do this. And then, like you said, having a group to go back to going, hey, did you do it? You know, and you know, I can't let these folks down. Or I don't know, for me, it's like, I do better when I put it in other people's perspectives. Like, oh, I can't let this person know. I got to do it. I got to get through. I know I don't make promises to myself a lot. I mean, that's something for my therapist and I to unpack, but I always put things in perspective. Like, oh, if I owe something to somebody, then I'm like, oh, I'm going to do it. Cause
right.
It's I like hate that feeling.
You work with a trainer at the gym, not cause you need a trainer, but because you need someone to be held accountable to. I'm saying this theoretically, I don't go to the gym.
Right. Very well then. Well, that's awesome. And again, it sounds like, you said that there's really cool work that's going to be done in person, right? You said, can you speak more? How would people access that and how people do that?
Absolutely. So this is actually a really exciting time as we're speaking in mid-February. So if all goes according to plan, because you always have to make that caveat with COVID, but we are planning next month in March to finally reopen the aforementioned art studio, which will be open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday during museum hours. So families or any visitor can come in. We're going to have different art projects going on. You can come in anytime. You do need to make a reservation for the art studio when you make your reservation for the museum. There's no additional charge, but we're just, you know, we're trying to have some control over how many people are in the space. We don't want it to get too crowded. But yeah, we're going to have lots of fun stuff going on in that space again, finally, after almost exactly 2 years. We're also going to be reopening on Tuesdays and Wednesdays again next month. We've been only open Thursday through Sunday, but we're going to come back to our 6 days a week, which we're super excited about. And yeah, so slowly but surely we're coming back. Oh, and I'll also mention, again, it's not my area, but the school tours will be starting to come back next month as well. So March is a really big turning point for us at the Art Museum in terms of starting those first steps toward being back together, having some safe gatherings a little bit. We have some new exhibitions opening up. Christy Mattson, who's a wonderful weaver based out of LA, her show is going to be opening next week, actually. And then we have a photography exhibit opening in our photography level next month. So a lot of really exciting things coming up, which I'm so pumped about.
Well, I mean, I could tell the enthusiasm there. You're a great ambassador for the museum as you're able to pitch a lot of the stuff that's emerging. And as we're winding down, we're going to try, because you named it earlier, we're going to try a new sort of checking out question, and you named it in about person, role, and system, right? And so just to refresh, I don't think we've ever talked about this before at home. When you talk about person, role, system, your person refers to who you are and your experiences and your identities and all that makes you. We talk about role, that speaks to you take on roles, right? So you hopefully consciously activate elements of your person into whatever role you're in, be it a formal role or sometimes there are informal roles, right? And then ultimately, roles exist because they're part of systems, right? I'm the senior director at Imagine MKE. I'm a dad, you know, to my two daughters, you know, all these things, right? So we all belong to different systems, right? And so ideally you want these systems to evolve, and that's why you're pushing your leadership. So here's the question. I was setting that's for the home audience to be like, what are they talking about, personal system? Hopefully it won't take another 2 years to celebrate you, but let's imagine a year from now, what do you hope you're celebrating? If you're to come back on the show, we should have you back in a year. What do you hope you're celebrating at the person level, the role level, and maybe at a system level? So what are the three celebrations you hope we're having?
Oh wow, that's such a good question. Well, certainly I'm extremely hopeful that a year from now we will be fully back in person. I'll be teaching classes at the museum and not over Zoom. Although I will say teaching over Zoom has been a surprisingly pleasant experience for me, not as a classroom teacher, but as an art educator with the museum. So I guess that's more of a role goal. I hope we have that. I hope the Playdate program that I mentioned for toddlers, I hope that's fully back and we can be together. That it's maybe my favorite part of my job. It's so cute, it's so fun. So I hope we can be back together in Wendover Hall in a year. I hope all that stuff is, I'm not going to say back to normal because I think we all know things are not going to be totally the same, but I hope we're back together. In terms of person, I think I hope, you know, I started just 8 months before COVID. I feel like when you started a new position, it takes about a year to really understand all the parts of your job, to see all the parts. I still haven't experienced like art in bloom, you know, after almost 3 years. It's finally happening this year, so I'll experience it. But, you know, there's all these things that like were put on pause for me. Mm-hmm. And not just at work, but like in Milwaukee, like I finally got to see Summerfest, but like a different version, right? That was a little delayed and, you know, a little bit different from normal. So I'm hoping I can kind of restart, like unpause from where I was as a new resident of Milwaukee. And I can really experience everything in like a more full way with like a better understanding of like, oh, this is how this goes. This is what people are really excited about. I get it. And then in terms of system, there've been a lot of changes at the art museum. The staff recently unionized, which is a really big change.
Wow.
And we've given a lot of thought to DEAI practices. You know, we're hardly the only institution who's done that, but I think we're making some real progress toward accomplishing those goals. One thing that was pushed by our department was for every single staff member to make their own DEAI goals and to make them public, to share them with everyone, and then to follow up and see, hey, did you do this thing you said you were going to do? And I thought that was such a great kind of program to start. And I hope and I foresee that it will continue that kind of growth. And the follow-up to really see, like, are you just talking the talk? As you were saying earlier, it's easy to say, oh, I have this intention, I want to do this, but did we actually do it? So I hope we continue that growth as an institution. And I foresee a lot of really great things happening in the near future. So I'm excited.
Oh, well, I hope that I look forward to celebrating that with you. And hopefully we have you back at that time, if not in person, or, you know, I say to David, like, we should sign you to a holding deal, because I think you ought to host a pod on the network. Cause it's just, you know, not that this is like a backdoor pilot, not this is like, you know, Mork on, you know, Robin Williams on Happy Days, or, you know, or Maude, you know, on all my Norman Lear, Gary Marshall references are really super relevant to a lot of the young audience members out there. Like, what is he talking about? But, you know, We gotta have you back or get you on the network somehow, but we'll celebrate that. In the meantime, Diane, where can folks find you if they're not when they're done listening? Like, I gotta find more Diane. How can they find you?
Yeah, come to the art museum. I'm still working from home at the moment, but I will soon be there all the time. We have I mentioned the art studio. We also have our art pack station, which has all these activities that family, again, I keep saying families, but really it's anyone, you can check out. If you love to draw, we have a sketch pack for you. We have family guides for you. So I'm there all the time. So please come on over. I would love to meet other Imagine Pod fans.
Let's give them like a special word that means that they listen to the pod, and then you got to do something cool for them. So what would that word be for you? Like a password or like a, you know, a word they would say like, oh yeah, I heard this invite.
Right.
Give a word out there so when people see you.
I remember you guys had like, you had like a hashtag. What was it? It was early on. It was like, imagine.
I don't know. It's obviously so awesome because you can't remember right now. What's yours though? This is for you because it's like a promo code except it's in person. And you're not giving them anything. I'm not asking. Well, I don't know. I'm inviting you to maybe they get a special greeting. I don't know. But I would love it if somebody came up to you because we've got thousands of people listening to this podcast. Wink. They would come up to you at the museum going, hey, Palomino. And they're like, all right, you heard it. What would be that word?
For me, the secret code is Reggie and Oliver. Those are the names of my two cats. I mentioned I babysat when I was in grad school in New York. I babysat for a few different kids, and several of them would be like, Reggie and Oliver, because I tell them about my cats and show them food. So that's my.
So if they come up to you and go, hey, Reggie and Oliver said hey, then you're gonna be like. You're going to produce some really cool gift bag.
You get something special.
You're going to get, here are 100 reads. Here are the 100 reads that you need to read.
Yeah. So if you're in the museum, you see the Korean lady with glasses.
The one Korean lady at the museum with glasses. And you go, Reggie and Oliver. I hope it would be so great if our pod was so huge. People start wearing shirts. And great. I want to make a thing. I would love it. Like we have these secret. People just going up to you with secret codes. All right.
That would be so cool. I love that.
Diane, thanks again for making it happen. Such a joy to have you on, and we'll let you go. Have a great one.
Oh, thanks for having me back. It's always great to speak with you.
See, the thing is, I love usually having a duo. It's fun to tag team with David or Lindsay when we do these interviews. But when you have Diane, you can tell there's a lot of personality there. So I'm kind of glad it was a one-on-one because I don't know if we had any, me yapping, she talking. It's a lot. But I honestly say Diane's one of my favorites in the Imagineverse because of just her relentless positive energy. Her creativity, and I mean it. We got to sign her to a holding deal because I think she would have a fun pop culture pod. Maybe they'll just reenact those conversations she would have, over the cubicles with odds of other Milwaukeeans about something. If you dig that, let us know because this is us testing the waters on new pods. I'm also really grateful for you all to continue listening despite not having. Lindsay and David in the interview. Appreciate you rolling with me solo. If you like this episode and like to help support the podcast, please share with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating or review. Contact us directly at pod@imaginemke.org. Imagine This Podcast is a team effort produced and edited and hosted by Mac Antigua, that's me, David Lee, and Lindsay Sheridan. It's also the flagship of the Imagine MKE Podcast Network. Our podcast theme was produced by Bobby Digital, Bobby Drake. Make sure you also listen and subscribe, as well as check out back episodes of Black Imagination and Arts Forward MKE, all of which can be found at imaginemke.org/podcasts. To catch all of the latest from Imagine MKE, hit us up at Twitter and Instagram at @imagine_MKE or Facebook at @imaginemke. Head over to imaginemke.org and sign up for the Amplifier. That way you get a bi-weekly update of David Lee goodness in your email inbox. And who doesn't want that? In the meantime, I'll be sure to bring back my teammates for next week's episode, which will be posted the following Tuesday. Until then, have a great one, everybody. Bye.